Okay, we have an agenda. Do we have a motion to approve?
I'll second.
All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion passed. We have two sets of minutes, one from April 26th.
I'll move both of them, let's just change this.
You were the only one here for both of them, so you can do that. And then I will second the April 26th.
You want to remind the question, because I'm not going to vote, I'm going to vote on both of them.
Well, we're going to, let's do one at a time.
Let's do one at a time.
One at a time.
March 20, April 26th.
April 26th, you moved, I'll second, because I was here. All in favor? Aye.
I think I'll abstain. I don't know.
You were, you're here for the May 24th one.
Okay.
And so May 24th.
I'll move to that one.
And I'll second that one.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And I'll abstain.
This is the hardest part.
I know, it's only three of us.
Because I don't tend to write it down, and then I go back and I go, okay.
Are any oral communications, members of the public, or anybody here, anything for Ruby? No, nothing today.
Oral communication last night's good enough for this day.
Exactly. Okay. Staff report.
Okay. We're still looking good. There's still nothing's really changed. We have the ordinary and the financial reports. We are 92% of the year according to this, and actually on Wednesday we're done.
Not done with counting, but we're done. Done with the year. But
yeah, we're done with the year, yes. E-rate. We haven't got it yet. They checks in the mail. Again, and if this check doesn't come, we're giving them a deadline, and then we've sorted out what we owe, what they owe us. Our consultant has done that for us. And
what do we do?
We sue them.
Can we start whining? Can we start suing?
We'll start suing. Celestial's ready. We needed some more information.
Are other libraries doing the same thing?
Apparently, we're the only ones being treated this way. So we probably won't get it in this budget. I took it out for next year. If we get it, it's a boon. Great, if it helps. If we don't get it, it's tied up in a long time. Pooled cash, $25,000 to the good, almost $26,000.
Work. Keep up the good work. Do the right direction.
Yep. Jack was happy. I didn't do an estimate for the end of the year. It's so close to this, it's pretty much whatever it is now. It's what it is. We don't have anything big out there that we expect to mess anything up. So pretty much there. Any questions on the?
There was some place, and now I can't remember where, so let me just ask the question. I had it written down on the copy that I left at home on my desk. There was something that said capital, it was like a capital project happening, like spending was going on. What would that be?
Maybe the question I asked Jack, it was on the balance sheet, it was $52,000 construction in progress. I'm like, what is this? It's Felton.
It's the planning.
The planning for Felton, which isn't actually coming out of our
right.
So if we think the probability is that when work starts or planning starts on a project, that it's going to end up with a capital project, then we capitalize it and say, here's our investment in that as an asset. And so far, there's been studies, I guess, in design work, if I understand right. But if at some point we determined that the project isn't going to go through in all likelihood, then we would take that off the balance sheet.
Right. Yeah.
And it would convert to buildings at some point if the building was.
For some reason, I am missing page 16. Which is the working capital loans, the first part of the same. Why? I messed with my packet, so who knows what I did with it. I'm taking this to the board just the next month so you see it. It's based on Jack's report to City Council. Mike's already basically seen the, he'll see where I stole, plagiarized, and didn't give credit. This is the working capital loan of the $1 million, and the city's agreement to do it for another year at about the 2%. So I just wanted to give you a heads up that this was going to.
It sets out the conditions that Jack referenced earlier about $1 million, and of course, preserving the right to city finds itself for some reason in a cash flow crisis that we are not obliged to provide the money.
So we add in the language the council holds to include the judgment of city manager by the rest of the city, and also that there be an annual review.
So,
but there would, Teresa would have some like discretion to elect which vendors would have paid
right.
Yes. And which ones would be without.
Travel agent for the Tahiti trip.
Yeah.
That's not for a minute, but it's now on tape, so. Oh, well. That was a joke!
I have a question on the second paragraph where you give us the information on how many days we've exceeded, you know, X hundreds of thousands of dollars, and the million one being the one of interest to me. And so that's since. Okay, so the past 2 years.
So that's two. It was mostly last year, wasn't it? That you,
yes,
of 09,
it really started in July of 08 was when the first started going negative.
But the $1 million we didn't hit.
We only hit on a couple occasions, and I gave the most extreme example when it was a 2 week stretch.
Right.
In the early part of the fiscal year.
Okay, and that was this year.
That was very beginning of this fiscal year, okay, before the cuts started taking effect. We had pretty high payroll costs because we run double payroll. Not double payroll, but the layoffs hadn't happened yet, so we were still.
Right.
Okay. So let's hope it doesn't happen this year. Okay. The CalPERS Actuarial Issues Report. I'm not even sure. Go for it, Jack.
Okay. I should point out that the city plans to have a workshop to talk about pension issues on the evening of July 13th. And our actuary, John Bartel, who authored this report that's in the agenda packet, will be there to help us explain some of the pension options that the city has and the trends and where the rates are going and so forth. And that's what this report does. It attempts to look at the trends, talk about where we're going and where we are, as well as talk about what second tier retirement would look like should we go in that direction, to try to provide some options to the council.
So I have a question just for me. The city, first of all, we apportion the pension costs out to the library based on per capita or whatever, some ratio of library personnel versus other personnel in the city.
Well, it's a function of we get a rate for miscellaneous employees, which everybody's the office employer, and then that rate is applied to the actual salary of every library employee to their salary.
So the city has a very high, compared to other cities in this community and other places, not everything, but something like Watsonville, and I think the county, fairly high pension costs we're paying. There's a percentage of salary that goes to pension is higher for the city of Santa Cruz than say for the city of Watsonville. There's a story about that. And the major reason for that is, for example, Watsonville is growing, therefore the number of people who are putting money into the plan, covering the cost of the number of people who are retired, is actually a ratio is better in current employees to retirees, whereas the city of Santa Cruz, because we've been shrinking, and the same with the library, making cutbacks, and because we're a
a mature city where it's not growing, where you don't have a lot of new services or expansion, like some other cities, like Watsonville's, you know, increased the population dramatically over the last 10 years. So as a result, I'm just trying to figure out what the impact of that is on the library. It'll be the same problem, it's still a higher, relatively higher percentage. And in this case, it's not unfair necessarily because the library is doing the same kind of cutback ratios as the, and the library system hasn't been growing the way, you know, some cities that are like Watsonville is putting out new residential housing and stuff. Am I correct in understanding?
You're correct. I think it's more pronounced in the public safety arena for us, meaning where we actually have more retirees than we have current active employees in police and fire.
That's why their retirement rates are like 47-49% for police and fire, and it's only 30-something percent for miscellaneous.
You know, for miscellaneous, our rate's about, I think, a little around 14% right now.
14%.
And so we're really not down on the line
for
miscellaneous.
Total benefits.
That's for the employer side. Then the employees make 7% on top of that. So altogether, it's 20-21%. But yeah, that's an issue for us too, because obviously, because the library workers and miscellaneous workers we're leveling off or reducing, we're not increasing anymore.
So then the only way out of that is growth, which we're not necessarily, we'd love to have money to make the library bigger, but we're not going to have population growth. So it's just a matter of, we have new revenues that allow us to hire more staff and have more library services, that ratio would get better for us, but and other parts of the city, but otherwise.
So yeah, there are pressures on getting enough money in there to pay all the retirees now. Particularly as CalPERS doesn't earn as much money as them.
Because of the economic crisis that I've been trying to use today.
So the session on July 13th is an open council meeting, so that board members wanted to go and listen.
Yes, it's open to the public. We're inviting the public to come and participate. So if the library board members want to invite, maybe we should send an email out inviting all the libraries.
Can you do that?
Giving time to plan ahead. Inviting them all, they definitely would love to have them there. They're welcome to ask questions. So I think it'd be useful for them to see them.
I'll send them to
the issues of what does a two-tier system look like, and what happens to the tier, and the rules of it and stuff, and the ratios would be really helpful for people to see.
Well, we're going to have our next, I think it will too. I think we should invite everybody. We're going to have our next board meeting on the 12th.
I just don't give people more than chase notice if they don't know that.
No, I know.
So it's 7 o'clock, right?
7.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, that's the plan. Would you like me to take you through any of the graphs in a, I won't say superficial, but in a brief sort of a way?
I'll tell you the part that I would like. I think I'm going back to the tier stuff. For me, unless somebody wants to do something before that. But for me, the basics on investment returns, et cetera, I won't say they're totally clear, but I think I understand them.
Well, I wouldn't mind a moment on this chart on page 21, where I've been there.
I should point out.
That's for CalPERS system-wide, right? I mean, statewide or whatever. First chart.
Yes, this is the state's investment returns.
So what's causing it to go up at the end? Are things improving actually?
They actually did. They over this last year, the stock market rebounded because it had fallen so far. It rebounded, and so they're doing better. They still have some astounding losses to contend with cumulatively, but the stock market did better, and they do invest heavily in stocks and equities and real estate and just about everything else.
All of which
I did bring a colored copy because I saw that this particular page was not easy to read all that. I was looking for another line somewhere and I couldn't find it, so I thought you might have the same dilemma.
It says the CalPERS board expanded the corridor from 80% to 140% to 120%.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, they've got.
Are you anything?
They've got various ratios. They've got. It gets pretty esoteric, but they've got. They don't like anything to get too out of whack, and so they create some limits and say, okay, we've got all these actuarial assumptions, and actuarial assumptions are supposed to reflect eventual reality of their best guesses, but sometimes the actuarial computations are pretty far from reality. So they try and look at market values and actuarial values and say, okay, those shouldn't be too far apart. So they say in here about the 80 to 120%, or something like that.
Page 21.
Thank you. They say that normally, the smoothing, they've gotten to smoothing methods. The idea here is they don't want to clobber us all at once with extreme rate volatility. So they have some smoothing they go through. And before, a couple years ago, they would smooth adjustments over 3 years so that that would try and, again, reduce the volatility so that they basically, if you had to do a big rate increase, they basically simplistically say, we'll do it over 3 years. But with the extent of the losses, 3 years wasn't enough. So they said, we're going to go to 15 years, which is a long time. So that if you had a 15% loss, you'd only see, you know, 1% of it hit you the next year. And along with that, they said, the smoothing method allows, they had limits. They said, well, that the actuarial value couldn't be less than 80% nor more than 120% of the market value. So there's a market value and a value they're using for setting rates. And they're saying that they couldn't stay within 120%. And even with the 15 years, well, they should say the 15 years smoothing set up a situation where actuarially they were able to keep a lot of value that wasn't really there. Because the market value said it wasn't there, but the actual value said it was. So they said we can handle that, but only to a certain extent. They don't want to deviate too much. But they couldn't stay within the 120%, meaning actual value was more than 120% of the market value. So now they're saying we're going to push it up to 140% so that we can.
Okay.
So they change the boundaries and it was in their control.
Yeah. So all that is happening is we still owe just as much money as we ever owed, but we're going to pay it much later.
Later.
And because you pay it later, of course, there's a big price tag that goes with that. You know, you're paying more dollars back to push it into the future, but to try to keep some sanity on rates that came up with these smoothies. So does that answer the question?
Well, actually, no. I think you helped me better understand. I mean, really, what they were talking about, because it was kind of a fog when I was reading. So
basically, this chart that Mike asked about does show the one with all the volatility is the market, mm-hmm. the market gains and losses. The one that's close to the 7.75% is the actuarial. Actuaries assume that they'll earn 7.75% year after year on the long term. They're currently saying they may drop that a little bit, but the idea is that it's a long term, and you can have lots of different things happening in the short term, but long term they want to earn that, and so they set the rates assuming they'll earn that. Now if they say they're going to earn less than that long term, they're going to have to hike the rates even more to make up for the to bring in the amount of money.
But they're talking about a really minor, it's something 7.65 or something. They're not talking about drop.
They've been talking about 7 to 7.5.
Yeah.
Is that what it's historically been? I mean, at least over the recent past?
I've been at PERS conferences twice years ago where they said the 7.75, you can't look at it short term. When you look out over 40, 50 years, we've earned 9-10%. That's a good solid number. Recently, I think in here the report says that they've earned an average of 3% over the last 10 years. And there are arguments on all sides, right. But I've heard PERS adamantly, they're actually saying, there's no way we should reduce that. Now, they're saying a different story now, but for a long time they would not reduce that. So I don't know if it's a judgment call, but clearly it seems like long-term rates should be well over 6%. You know, you can argue what the number ought to be, but I don't think it should be any less than that.
Why don't they just invest in more conservative investments?
Then they'd have to charge us much higher rates.
Higher
they could do that. The returns would be less. They wouldn't be earning as much money because a big part of the way PERS pays for its pensions is to investment returns. You know, there's the investment returns, there's employee payments and employer payments. So the investment returns go away, then they have to get more out of it.
Their average earnings are only 3% over the last 10 years.
Just to give an idea, like the University of California, between in 1991, realized that they were making so much money off of their investments that they didn't need to charge either the employer or the employees any contributions to the retirement system until this about 2 years ago. So 2007, they started talking about it. 2008, now they're actually making some new adjustments and putting some more money back in. But they literally, employees were making a 2% contribution at the time in 91, and they diverted, they took that 2% and put it into a, an investment that you get money back on. It's a
facility?
No, it's a defined contribution. So basically, putting money into a bank account, they invest that separately, or in part of the same thing.
But you get
back when you retire. You give it to you as money that they've been, investing for you in your thing, and that money you could actually borrow against with a bunch of regulations and rules and stuff, unlike your regular pension. And that began to break down in 2007, but that's a long time from 1991 to 2007. They had so much money investment, they didn't need any contributions. They were about 114% over 6 years there with investments. They were making 114% of what they needed to pay off all the people in the system. And that's because the system was expanding and stuff, but now that's sort of different reversed and they're investing. And the same thing's happening with STIRS and PERS and all these other groups, right? The same investments are just not given the return they were getting before. That's why contributions are slowly going up.
There's some charts in here that the actuary shows that given the smoothing that we expect to get to about only about 15% over the next few years in terms of the employer rate, but the underlying rate is really 18% for miscellaneous. It's the only reason we won't be at 18 right away. We will certainly get there. It's just because the smoothing delays how quickly we go up to that. And then there was a separate handout. I think Teresa gave you that where I had written the savings to second tier retirement would provide the library as an estimate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I put it in here.
So just assuming that because the library makes up about 13.5% of miscellaneous of the total city's miscellaneous salaries, I just took a 13.5% of the savings that the actuary projected. And so literally if it was adopted right now, the library would save $4,000 next year and would trend up to $59,000 by 2020-21. And really the reason these numbers aren't that big is because we'd be saving, I think, 1.3% of salary. That's the savings by going to a second tier for miscellaneous. The savings are a little more bigger in public safety, but for this, so they're not big numbers.
And that's when going to a second tier, that's a decent retirement program.
It certainly is.
You save a fortune if you just leave people 401ks or something, or they go in there.
It would be going.
And that's only, there'll only be new people coming in.
Right, there'll only be new people. So this is a function of turnover. And it would be going from 2% at 55 to 2% at 60.
And so if it's only new employees, so what the assumptions for the library would be?
Yeah, my question is, does that mean new library employees or would that not matter? Because there's new employees coming into the miscellaneous that changes the rate for miscellaneous.
You're right, because the library is blended, if you will, with the city's miscellaneous employees. It's a function of turnover at the city.
So it's not library turnover. So the fact that we have no turnover, we're not contributing our...
And these days, there's not a huge amount of turnover in the city either, and that's what's still there. Pretty good management. Who wants to do their job right now?
There's none of the library.
Okay.
So I think it's.
By the way, just so people know, that this is what will come out of that meeting on the 13th. The 2% at 60, it doesn't really affect how much you take home for the rest of your life when you retire. It's just you have to work a couple more years to get there. And so I think it. 67 years old, it converges, and there's no difference in the two plans. It's just what you get if you retire before you reach 60. I think that's the year. I remember I saw a chart that showed for miscellaneous.
I think it was 62 were 63, but you're right.
At some point, it's not as if in the future, if people who work for the public sector aren't going to get used to retirement, they are going to have to work on that and get it, but it's not going to be, you know, now you work all your life with the city or the library and you don't work, you know, just retirement. Which I think, this is obviously, I disagree, it's philosophical, but I think people are living longer, and I think the idea that people, you know, work till they're 65, whatever, is not the end of the world.
On page 33, I think you can see that. About page 33, it shows you that they equal at age 63. Okay. Somebody that works to age 63 under either plan gets 2.418% of their salary per year working. You see that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
there you
are.
There is. Between this program of 2% and 60 and 55. So these two numbers, how they convert to 63.
And I'm actually an example of that. I worked for a city that had a better retirement plan, but I was in no hurry to retire. So they all earn the same amount of money as well as I work. It's an extra incentive to work.
Because people like your job so much.
Mm-hmm. And the tier two alternative. Is this alternative, where did the alternative come from? I mean, did CalPERS suggest it, or is this something that the city has come up with?
Well, CalPERS has certain options, and they're all listed here for miscellaneous. These are all the potential plans.
Okay.
As to what caused it to come into discussion, just, I guess, our financial crisis, leadership of our city manager, questions raised by folks, including city council.
I understand that. I just wonder why, for example, on page 36, it was the 2% at age 60 alternative versus any other alternative that might exist.
You're trying to build a second tier that's, it's not arbitrary, but it's an open choice, but it's, you're trying to build a retirement system that's not so much worse than the one we have now.
Right.
You end up with literally two classes. I mean, there are two classes, citizen forms in a different plan, but it's not, they're so dramatically different that people, if they're angry at each other or something, you know, close enough. Again, if it, by the time you're 63, the same plan, it's not like one group of people gets a decent retirement and the other people are set out on the curve.
Yeah, sure, it doesn't really talk about it much, but there's an option here of 1.5 at 65 that is considerably lesser benefit.
Right.
And no agency in California uses that currently, but it's there. But basically, so the only option other than that one that would save money is the 2% at 60. If we were outside of CalPERS, we have much more flexibility, but the law says these are the only allowable options, so we're kind of limited at what we can look at.
And also, what's new, this is not just the city manager and the financial crisis both the library and the rest of the city are facing, but also the fact that Palo Alto and Mountain View, which are two fairly wealthy cities, have now gone to two-tier system. Four police agencies at the state level have gone to a two-tier system, which is what started with the 3% 50 for the public safety folks anyway and stuff. So I think there's a move in California. And finally, maybe the most dramatic, more conservative, anti-tax folks who are basically threatening to just remove all public pensions or something draconian, sort of pushing us to say we should do something ourselves first that's more rational and reasonable before we wait till they put something on the ballot that just completely blows out public pensions.
The other two things that this to save 1.3% besides reducing the or increasing the age, the two other pieces here that are relatively small pieces, but it would remove a survivor's benefit that is there, and it would also
it would be 3-year averaging, which would stop
you from going 3-year averaging.
The thing where you take all your sick leave and whatever you have left, and not take like your vacation pay in your last year, and so your last year you get all this money, and then you retire on this sort of artificial year that's nothing like what you've been working for from this year, you know, the last year's work. Almost all these systems, the second tier is going to a 3-year averaging, which is what used to be before they changed it about 10 years ago.
And no survivor benefit?
Well, right. I have to be, at least there's one. I'm not sure we may have another survivor benefit, but the survivor benefit that's part of this package would disappear. And I know any employee has the right to, when you retire, to choose a higher benefit just for yourself or a lesser benefit that allows your spouse to receive something. So, but this is separate from that. This is employee gets to retire, get their full pension, and then they pass away first. Their spouse gets a lesser benefit, even if you took the full benefit.
Basically, you choose a survivor retirement plan, but it's not, they get nothing if you choose that. Give me everything the most I can possibly have, and your spouse doesn't get it, or your partner.
Change the
kind of
thing.
Okay.
Any other question, Barbara?
No, I've got
my
answer.
Okay.
Can I just say, politically, it's critical that we come up with a plan that's not so impoverished to the replacement that we end up with a political possibility of getting anybody to agree to do it, or it has to be imposed, and you have major labor disruptions over the stuff. It needs to be something that people see as responsible, right? That's not a mathematical problem. That's a
well, I mean, it's sort of a directional change that makes sense. It's not going to save significant amounts of money for the library. Anyway. I'm sure it will for other.
It doesn't say that much in this city, but in this case, it seems the most public safety money for the retirement rates are huge.
So I was going to bring this to the board. So
okay, so
it'd
be great if you send out a message.
And I'll send out a message to them.
Out there fighting, brought encouraged to participate.
The only other issue is...
By the way, there'll be other meetings like that when it's not going to last, but it's going to get one going.
We're scheduled to meet July 26th. I'm going to try to propose we don't have an August board meeting, because apparently in the past we've not had one. I would like to cancel the July finance meeting, if that's okay. I'm planning a vacation, and that day is the pivot day, whether we come back that day or the day.
I would be iffy anyway. I come back from vacation on that day, so everything went fine. I would be here, but... Who knows?
Yeah.
No, that's fine.
I'm going to Phoenix to burn, but.
Well, we don't have a lot of nothing.
There won't be much. There's nothing on the new year, and the end of this year is still probably won't be quite finished. Then usually year end takes a little bit longer of a true year end.
May not be on the right numbers.
So, thank you. Getting my plans.
Although, if something significant happens, we probably
will be gone.
But we will have in August. I mean, I think in the past we've said we'll cancel it, but reserve the right if something unexpected blows up or happens. We'll hopefully.
Please, we're done with that.
Okay. So then, August 23rd would be our next meeting.